Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. It's January 25th, 2017, and I have Brad Reedy on the phone. Brad, good morning. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Lon. Good to talk to you again.
Well, Brad's a clinical director and the co-founder of Evoke Therapy Programs, a clinician for some time, had worked with troubled teens or struggling teens for a number of years down in Utah. And we're going to talk about therapy. And a specific topic is exposing the myth of therapy. Okay, that's a provocative topic. What do you mean, myth of therapy?
I think for me, Lon, it's the idea that people misunderstand what the process is. For me, I'm an experiential therapist. I run an experiential program, a wilderness therapy program, so I value that and what it can do. But I also want to acknowledge that just walking into a therapist's office and showing up, taking the risk of having the reaction that maybe you had in your childhood or from others, that you were rejected or unlovable or something to be worried about or something to be fixed. I just want to give honor and credit to that process. And for the practitioner, I also want to talk or speak to this idea that it's not about being the guru or the expert on somebody else's life, but it's about the capacity to hold them with kindness, compassion, and acceptance. And through that process, that the healing starts to occur. So that's what I'm challenging, is this idea that it's about the guru or the exchange of information.
So you're trying to turn it into what's been in the news lately, a safe place for the person to go and to be themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a great phrase. And it's subtle, because I think a lot of therapists are well-intended, but when they have this idea that I'm the expert, I know your truth, and I'm going to impose that on them, one author calls that good abuse, and suggests that there's no way to cure bad abuse with good abuse. And so it is that idea of the safe place. And the safe place, by the way, is the mind of the therapist. It's not the physical location. That needs to be, of course, safe, and that goes without saying. But it's the mind, it's how the therapist holds you in your mind that becomes that safe or that unsafe place.
Well, that's sort of intriguing, because I'm thinking that therapists have been, there's been some criticism for some time. And I know when I first started at a therapeutic boarding school in the 80s, there was a lot of kickback on therapists because of the chain hospitals. Now, all kinds of things were going on in hospitals and drug treatment programs that really gave a bad name to therapists and to therapy. And I know I was part of the group. It was basically, it's an alternative, emotional growth, which has been incorporated. Those principles have been incorporated into it. But it was, I think I would conclude from what you say is that a large part of the reason for that negative perspective, and some of it's still around, is exactly from what you're talking about. Too many therapists don't know that it's an experience rather than imparting knowledge.
Right. I think that that's true. I think that bad rap, that bad image that's out there, I think it's a lot of it's earned, because, you know, especially you get a PhD, you're educated. You know, a lot of therapists that I meet are well-intending. They have, you know, they have what they see as good lives, successful lives, and they think, I now am going to honor you with my truth and tell you what to do. They look at it as problem solving. I don't think the process of therapy, at least the way that I'm talking about, it's not a problem solving endeavor. The endeavor is to find the self, to develop the self. And that can only happen when the therapist makes space, doesn't get caught up in techniques, isn't driven by their own ego, their own need to fix. That can only happen when a therapist expands their capacity and really finds the ability to allow the client to show up the way the client needs to show up and to move through the process that way.
How do you approach it? Can you give me an example, or maybe a specific example, but how do you go about providing that safe place or being open to the client to where they can experience it rather than listen for words of wisdom?
You know, a lot of times I'm recognizing themes. What I'm trying to do is find their story. So when somebody's talking about what's going on or a decision that they're making, and they're often asking me for advice, I mean, I get consistently asked for advice. I first of all, don't answer the advice. And I reframe the question. And I say, it sounds like you are in a no-win situation. If you do assert yourself with your parents, you're going to feel ashamed. You're going to feel guilty. You're going to be punished for it, maybe even, or told that you're making excuses. And on the other hand, if you don't express yourself to your parents, then you're going to feel depressed and discouraged, and something's wrong with you, that the hurt you feel or the anger you feel is invalid. So I can see that there's a no-win situation. In that moment, they're like, yeah, this thing I'm feeling is real. It makes sense. He didn't just give me a simple solution, which would have absolutely minimized the struggle. And then they have to figure out how to get themselves out of that place, and I don't need to tell them. And you know the amazing thing, Lon, it's like working with parents. I do a lot of parent education. And when they're asking advice, say, about dealing with a severely addicted child, if I tell them, kick your child out of your house or let her back in, I mean, you and I know this, working in this field for many years, sometimes parents kick their children out of the house and the kids die. Sometimes they let them back into their house over and over again and the kids die. And so there's got to be something to this piece where I don't know, if we all knew the perfect answer about what would bring everybody joy and connection, we would tell you what to do, but you've got to find your truth and live in it, and that's the only way you can deal with outcomes that are so tragic, and many are less tragic than that, but that's the only way that you can weather the difficulty in your life, is when you realize that the only project you have is showing up as authentically and honestly as you can.
You know, one term I've heard in the past periodically, and maybe this applies, would it apply or be accurate to say you're validating the other person?
Yeah, I think you are. I think, again, another example is just a phrase I often use in therapy is, that makes sense. I mean, that makes sense. Given, because it's true, isn't it? If I had your background, if I had your genetics and I had your history, I would come to the same conclusion. There's a famous quote that says, if we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in them sufficient sorrow and suffering to disarm all hostility. That's from Longfellow. I mean, if we knew your story, if I knew your story, if I could find your story, if I could help you to tell it or retell it for you in a way that makes sense, you know, reflect it back, then it's going to make sense. And then you know you're okay. You're not a bad person. You're just a wounded person. And then we can heal that wounding by connecting through our pain.
You know, that sounds, I had a thought while you're talking, that sounds consistent with Christianity, to where you're supposed to have compassion for all people.
I think so. I think ideally that's what it teaches, is compassion. And that's why, you know, love is the answer. That's the answer. Love is an action word. Gandhi says that if you can love another's otherness, if you can love another's otherness, then you have taken on the heroic task of your own differentiation. Going home, fusion is easy, it's simple, but loving another's otherness is heroic. And that's really what the capacity is for a therapist. It's not education or theory or psychology, but it's really developing more space, more flexibility, more ability to hold a client no matter how they show up.
How about an example of a couple situations where somebody came in, say a client or a student in your program, and they were there to be therapeutized, and that was their attitude. Therapy was getting pearls of wisdom or whatever. How would you handle that and turn that around to redirect it?
You know, one of the ways that the closest that I come to giving advice is saying, my idea on it is this. So that's how I start off. I say, I have this crazy idea. And I've learned that, because then if the other person disagrees with you and says, yeah, it's crazy, then you can back away. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is, and I have this with parents, I had this with parents last night in a seminar that I was leading. They were asking the question, what do I do? And that's what parents ask, what do I do? And they're really asking, what do I do so I can get the outcome that I want? And I said, my idea is that won't work. It won't work to aim it. You've got to figure out who you are first, and what your relationship is with this child and their problems. And then the solutions will come to you. Then you'll know what to do. If you do it for the wrong reason, if you do it to try to control, it'll never be right. And if you do it out of authenticity and honesty and genuineness and compassion and love and healthy self-care, it'll never be wrong. So I just present and teach a different idea about the process, but that doesn't stop people, including this person, from asking me over and over again, what do I do? And I get it. That's how they've been trained in life, is that there's a right way to do things. And if I do the right things, everything will be okay. And so there's a teaching that goes on where I'm kind of helping them with this model, this idea, this relationship that we're having together.
Okay, could you try to summarize, we're getting along towards the end of our time, but to try to summarize some takeaway that any parents might try to adopt or approach with more understanding with their own kids?
I think fundamentally it's not it's not practical to say to parents, don't be worried, don't be anxious, don't be frustrated, don't be angry at your children. That's going to happen in the course of relationships. What I say is, go take care of that somewhere else, with a therapist, with a sponsor, with a trusted friend. You need to take care of your emotions so that you can show up as compassionate and patient with your children, so you can show up with what researchers call response flexibility. So make your project as a parent taking care of your feelings and your anxiety, because the interpretation that children have when their parents are upset is, something's wrong with me. Something must be wrong with me if the person who loves me is this upset or this anxious all the time. I must be fundamentally flawed or broken. So you take care of yourself so that you can show up with patience, response, flexibility, and then your child experiences a whole different context where they don't experience this consistent, constant, this idea, this feeling that something must be flawed. So that's my fundamental piece, is take care of yourself. And as therapists, get supervision. Look at your stuff. When you're getting frustrated and angry with your client or with your child, you're losing contact with them. Because if you knew them and understood them, you would have compassion.
Well, I imagine all of the parents and the staff and the kids that come to your program get that treatment. Could you talk a little bit about, a minute or two as we wrap up, about Evoke and what it is you do, who you work with, and then more importantly, perhaps, contact information?
Yeah, absolutely. So Evoke Therapy Programs is a wilderness therapy program. It's based in Utah and Oregon, and so it's experiential. We use the outdoors and the experience of wilderness to facilitate change, to give people access to parts of themselves that they don't have access. It's a compassionate approach. We have a mind-body-spirit curriculum, so it's one where we try to treat the whole self in this process, and we do a tremendous amount of parent education. A fundamental tenet of our program is, this is a family issue. We give the family and the parents as much support as we can so that they can. I figure if you spend 1 hour with a parent, it's like spending 5 hours with their child in the long run, in the positive effect. So that's our work.
Okay. And co-ed teenagers?
Co-ed teenagers, young adults. We have single gender groups for adolescents. We have co-ed groups for young adults. We also run programs for adults. We do intensive retreats that I run for families and adults. And we also do adventure trips for 2 week, 1 week custom adventure trips for young adults and families, where it's kind of a therapy light or a recharge or a reconnection to part of themselves. So we call it therapy light or sober fun.
Okay, and that fits the busy schedules of the parents too better.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, and how, if somebody wanted to talk to you more about it, or to inquire about the program, how would they get a hold of you? Phone,
email? EvokeTherapy.com is our website, and our phone number is, a toll-free number is 866-411-6600.
Okay, and email, or do you just want to get that through the website?
Yeah, you can get all that information through the website. You can learn about the different programs, the different therapists, and contacting our admissions folks. They can either direct you to me, or they can help and answer all your questions about what we provide.
Okay, well, very good. Well, this is Lon Woodbury, the Woodbury Report. We've been talking with Brad Reedy. He's the clinical director and co-founder of Evoke Therapy Programs in Utah and Oregon. And thank you very much. Good to have you here, Brad. Very, very interesting.
Always good to talk to you, Lon. Thank you.